Shout out to my listeners out there. This is your host, Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. I hope everyone is doing all right out there, that to the best of y'all ability, y'all making the best conscious moves that y'all can to help move y'all forward in y'all endeavors. I've been getting a lot of feedback, man. People been hitting me up talking about, yo, Mo, man, we feeling this whole conscious move thing. We feeling it. We see the vision. We see where you trying to take it. In addition to that, a lot of people have stressed their impatience with wanting to hear more of what I have to say. While others have simply expressed, they said, yo, Mo, man, we can't wait to hear what the next topic is going to be about. So that's good. That's a good thing. This week's, I hope that what I have to say this week will spark some interest and help people move forward and help make them make the best moves that they possibly can make, and that we all can gain some benefit from it. But this week, the topic is going to be about picking our friends. This is why this week's title is called Consciously Picking Your Friends Like You Pick the Fruit, or Like You Pick the Fruit That You Eat. My mother would always say that to me. How many times, or all of us probably have seen our elders do this when we go into a supermarket, and we have done it in our elder years. When you go into a supermarket to go pick your fruits, you always see the apples on top of the apples, the oranges with the oranges, and you all see them stacked a certain way in the supermarket or at the fruit stand. But when you go pick these fruit, you're always ensuring that you're picking up the best fruit. You're smelling it. You're making sure that it's not rotten, that it's not old. You want to pick the best fruit possible, and there's a reason for that. Similarly, when we're picking our friends, we should be, if not more, cautious than we do when picking our fruit. So this is an old saying that I learned from my mother. She used to always say to me, Moshe, pick your fruit, pick your friends like you pick the fruit you eat. So I thought that this would be a very important topic as we discuss it today. My mother was very, very hard on me in terms of trying to instill this value of friendship when I was a very young child. I would be placed on punishment for a number of reasons, for being disobedient either in school or in my house. And she would just literally, like, her thing was just saying, well, you want punishment, turn the TV off, the radio off, and you're going to read some books. She would make me read in the Encyclopedia Britannica that I had in my room. I used to have to read that continuously. I used to have to write essays. And she was very big on that. But sometimes when I was on punishment, you know, sometimes your childhood associates, they come to your window or they inquire about what's going on. Why is it that you can't come out and play? And I noticed that when I used to be at the window, because we lived on the fifth floor in the projects at the time, I would go to her, or my friends would be downstairs yelling up to me saying, yo, Mo, you can't come out. And I'd be like, hold on, let me go ask my mother. Knowing that I'm on punishment, I would still go in my mother's room and say, Ma, can I go outside and go play with my friends? And my mother would always stress this to me. She would say, Moshe, listen to me. First of all, you're on punishment, so you're way out of line anyway. Secondly, how many times do I have to tell you that I'm your only friend in this world? You will not understand the significance or the magnitude of that until I'm dead and I'm long and gone. Well, the only thing she may have been wrong about was her being dead, long and gone, because I found that to be very true before my mother passed away on Christmas in 2014. Houdini had an old saying back in the days. How many of us remember that old song that they came out with, Friends? But in that song, they had a part in it that said, Friends, how many of us have them? friends, the ones we can depend on. Let me say that again. Friends, how many of us have them? Friends, the ones we can depend on. So what my mother was trying to teach me at that time was that you have to be very mindful of who you call your friends. See, I didn't know that at that time. I really didn't know that at that time. I thought that everybody who I was associated with outside of my home was a friend of mine. I come years later, it took me a very long time to realize that that was not true. I thought that the people who I ran the streets with were my friends. The people who I committed crimes with were my friends. I thought that the individuals who I were in a gang with were my friends. I thought everybody was my friend. But I now realize that that's not the case. Friends are few and far between. They don't come like that. I did not know that at that time, friends do not encourage each other to be the worst or to make poor decisions. I thought that my friend was a friend because we hung out every day. But I now know that friends encourage you to be your best and that they discourage you from being your worst. Friends encourage you to be your best and they discourage you from being your worst. In contrast, your so-called friends encourage you to be your worst while discouraging you from being your best. I'm going to say that again. Your so-called friends encourage you to be your worst while discouraging you from being your best. As a young man, I had so-called friends encouraging me to be the worst that I could possibly be. Committing crimes, lying, stealing, cheating. It all was encouraged by my so-called friends. But my true friends, the individuals who truly cared about me, always gave me the best advice, no matter what my personal views or opinions were about that. So when you're young, it's sometimes difficult to be able to differentiate what it is that someone is telling you. You can't differentiate or distinguish good advice from bad advice all the time. So when you're in the streets, a person might encourage you to be out there committing crimes. But he's telling you, yo, bro, you got to take care of your family by all means. So the advice that he's giving you might appear to be in your best interest, but it could jeopardize your freedom and your livelihood. So you can rob a convenience store, do like, yo, listen, man, I got to feed my family. I got to eat. They got to eat too, man. My kids need clothes. And your so-called friend would be like, yeah, dog, that's a fact, man. You got to eat, man. You got to get that bread. You got to get that bag, as they say today. But your true friends would be like, yo, what the hell are you doing, man? Why would you even rob a store? Why would you sell drugs? What's the purpose in that? What are you doing? You should be trying to be the best that you possibly can be. You should be in school. You should try to use your intellect to capitalize off making the best decisions that you possibly can. Why put yourself in a situation where you would jeopardize your freedom or your life? You're smarter than that. This is what your friends tell you. Does this mean that I didn't have friends? No, that's not the case. I had many friends. I had many people who encouraged me to be the best that I can be. But I had others who didn't. The bad thing about having people in your circle who are not in your best interest is that, again, you can't distinguish between your friends and your so-called friends. talk. Let me give you just some examples of some of my early childhood friends versus those who I ran the streets with, and then those who later on I was in a gang and in prison with. So some of my early childhood friends, when I make reference to this, I mean like in elementary school. I had some very, very good friends. Some individuals who I've known from the time that I was in pre-K all the way up to my young adult years. Some of these individuals always encourage me to make the best decisions I possibly can. When I got into them streets, that wasn't the case. I've had individuals encourage me to be the worst that I could possibly be. The values that my mother taught me about friendship in the home, I totally disregarded those values when I was in the streets. None of that mattered to me anymore. What did matter to me was that I simply wanted to do whatever made my so-called friends happy, or their views about me. Whatever their views about me were, I wanted to live up to that. Back into that whole peer pressure thing. So that the contrast between those who encouraged me to be the best that I could possibly be and those who did not was glaring. It was obvious. I remember coming across some individuals who would look at me and be like, "Yo, bro, this is not you. Like, you out here in these streets, you bugging, you slinging guns, you letting that thing fly, you wilding. Like, what are you doing out here?" I was like an alien to individuals who truly knew me. But these were my true friends. These are the guys who tried to pull me back into the Moshe that they knew, the fun, loving, joking kind of guy. Yeah, I may have had some behavioral issues, but these were the guys and the females. When I say guys, I'm not saying male or female, I'm saying in general, you know, these were the people who encouraged me to always be the best that I could possibly be. But I veered and deviated into a dark lifestyle where there were no friends, man. The streets don't have no friends, man. I'm just keeping it 100 with you, man. There's no friends in the streets. It's all goons, robbers, thieves, liars, crooks. And everybody's out to get what they can for their own selves. It's a selfish, dog-eat-dog, corrupt mentality that ultimately destroys everybody involved with it in one way or another. It destroys the best part of you. Is there some good in it? Of course, there's some good in it. But the harm ultimately outweighs the bad. And let me explain that, so I don't want nobody to misconstrue my words when I say that there's some good in the lifestyle. Again, the concept of one taking care of one's family is a good thing. But the manner in which it is being done is immoral. But that's neither here nor there. We're not here for that today. But the topic of friendship is important because when you're in that lifestyle, you can't differentiate or distinguish friend from foe or friend from so-called friend. The people who I thought were my friends, the ones that my mother tried to warn me of, when I was locked up, I called on my friends, so-called friends. And I asked them to render their help for me. Here it is. I'm in a predicament where my back is literally up against the wall. I'm facing 30 years in prison. And you know what my so-called friends did to me? Well, one of them took the stand and testified against me in open court. This is somebody who I thought was my friend. Somebody who my mother fed from out her very home and treated as her only son. I mean, as a son. This was my friend. This is who I would be willing to give my life for. My friend. But in addition to that, you have other friends who totally abandon you when you are in most need of them. Do friends do that? Do friends really abandon you when you're in most need of them? This is what some of my so-called friends did to me. When you're left alone in a cell. Now, this is no excuse. You know, everybody has to hold down their own, you know, wear their own responsibilities in this world. And I have done that. So I'm a man. I can accept what I have done. I can live up to it and be all right with what I've done. I'm content with that. So yes, I'm not blaming any of my so-called friends for not being a true friend to me. I just should have made better moves. I should have done the right thing, which was make better decisions and not put myself in a situation in which individuals who I thought were my friends would ultimately betray me. True friends do not betray you. True friends are supportive of you all the time. In spite of their differences with you, they will come to your aid no matter what. The psychological and emotional impact of sitting in a jail cell, having to come to terms with your so-called friend being called as a witness for the prosecution to help prosecute you for a case where they're trying to send you away for 30 years is something that I can't even describe. If you've never been through that, I can't sit down and really have a long, drawn-out conversation in regards to you trying to really understand what I had to go through, the betrayal that I felt. That made me reevaluate my entire perception of what I thought friendship was. I remember being on Rikers Island and talking to my mother, and I called my mother that night after this so-called friend of mine testified against me in open court. And I got on the phone with my mother and I cried like a baby. I cried like a baby, man. Like I cried like I was 5 years old. And you know, I cried not because I was in jail. I didn't cry because somebody testified against me or my so-called friend testified against me. I cried because my mother was right. And I was not smart enough to listen to the wisdom that she imparted upon me. And yet I'm sitting in jail facing 30 years. And it was like everything you taught me to protect me in this cold world, I disregarded. And now I know that what you told me is the truth. That's why I cry. I felt like, damn, she was just trying to protect me as any mother would. But when I'm done crying, my mother let me pour it out. And she asked me, she said, "Are you done?" I said, "Yes, Ma." She said to me, "I told you so." She wasn't saying it as if to get back at me like she has one up over me. Like, no. She was telling me like, "I told you so." Because then she then said, "Moshe, I was only trying to protect you from falling victim to a world you had no knowledge of." When I said I'm your only friend, I meant that I would be here with you no matter what. And now you had to go through this for you to understand that what I was saying was the truth. I share this story with y'all because y'all don't have to go through this story or your own personal story if you haven't gone through it already. You don't need to go through that. You have me sharing with you my own story. So there's really no need for you to go through your own. Hopefully you don't have to. But the psychological and emotional impact of that was very, very, very traumatic for me. Being in prison and being a part of a gang, that only exacerbated it, meaning it only made it worse. Because in a gang lifestyle, Sadly, man, people are really not your friends. They could care less about you. It's another dog-eat-dog mentality where everybody's trying to outdo the next person to rise up just for the sake of saying that, you know, I'm better than you, or, you know, I did this better than you. It's like a competitive world where everybody's trying to outdo the next man. The backbiting, the slander, people smiling in your face. It was a common theme individual used, man. The salute you, then shoot you. Your own homies will come up to you, salute you. So your guard will be down. And then as soon as you walk away, next thing you know, they walk up behind you to shoot you. This was the culture. This was the mentality of individuals up in the mountains, up north in the prison systems, where the mentality was constantly, how much can we bring down the next man as opposed to trying to empower him and uplift that person? This is not to suggest that there were not elements within that lifestyle where there were people who were doing playing their part in terms of uplifting and empowering others. But the vast majority of it was about tearing you down. So how can these individuals be your brothers, your friends, when all they're trying to do is beat you down, tear you down? They're encouraging negative behavior. They're discouraging you from being the best. I've had individuals, a part of the lifestyle, tell me, man, I don't care I've had individuals tell me from the lifestyle that they could care less about an individual. All they want to do is just engage in the pattern of senselessness, senseless violence. These are so-called big homies who I used to talk to, and on the gate, they would openly advocate violence in the sense that all of those who were under them, their soldiers, so to speak, they didn't care if they were enrolled in college. They didn't care if these individuals were programming and trying to go home. They could care less about that. The only thing that they were focused on was whether or not when they made a call, these individuals would follow up on that. So how are these your brothers? How are these individuals your friends? So I would encourage the young individuals, man, listen, man. You got to really, really pay attention, because these individuals don't care nothing about you. If they're going to send you on a doja move to do something to perpetuate some diabolical scheme coming from one of these individuals, then surely they don't care nothing about you. So the gang subculture is submerged or immersed with nothing but negativity. But not only that, it perpetuates this, or it gives off the impression that brothers are brothers and friends are friends, when that's not the case. We know that that's not the case. I know that that's not the case, because for 2 decades, I was a part of that lifestyle, and there's nothing about any brotherhood or any friendship, and that's not even the case. Now, again, that doesn't mean that there will be some individuals who are exceptional characters who step outside of that lifestyle and continue to maintain solid relationships. But again, that's few and far between, just as it is in life. You come across individuals that you can value or who also value friendship. And because of their teachings or their upbringing, their experiences, they've learned to value friendship as well. And then ultimately, you know, you two, y'all come together and y'all build a solid relationship. Because there are people in this world, for all intents and purposes, who they've been friends with their loved ones or their close ones, their close friends, for a very, very long time. My wife is a prime example of that. She and my sisters, as I call them, because they are my sisters, I've known them longer than I've known my wife. But they don't refer to me as their best friend. They simply refer to me as their brother. But to her, my wife that is, her and her best friends have been best friends for over 20, 25, 30 years. They've been best friends for a very long time. And they consider each other as such. And I like to compare the friends from my childhood to the so-called friends from my childhood to my wife's friends from her childhood. In comparison, my friends, I have the guys who I consider my so-called friends, I don't even have them anymore. They're no longer friends. But my wife, on the other hand, they are all each other's godmothers to each other's kids. Their kids are godbrothers and godsisters to one another. And their bonds seem to have gotten stronger as time has gone on. Whereas the so-called friends that I have had, the relationships that we've had has eroded through time. So what does that say about my friendship? It simply says that as I was picking my fruit, my friends, I was picking some sour fruit, some spoiled fruit. It was rotten, it was spoiled, and it wasn't good for me. So again, I had to go back to the drawing board. I had to reevaluate who my friends were. I really had to do that. And I would advise everyone to do the same. Don't take picking friends lightly, because you never know. You would think that you're picking up a good fruit when in fact this fruit is rotten. So my mother wasn't telling me anything wrong about knowing who your friends were in this life. I think each of us can say that we know someone who's our friend, someone who we can depend on. And in spite of me sitting in the prison cell, don't get it twisted, I've had some great friends replace the so-called friends that I thought I had and then became the friends or individuals who I consider my friends today. But even I had to learn something about being a good friend, because I wasn't always a good friend myself. See, and this is what happens when you get into them streets, that a part of you is lost. And I now know that a part of me was lost due to selfishness, greed, a desire just to be out for my own selfish interests. I had a childhood buddy of mine who, when we were young, we were very close. But I was so caught up in the streets that I failed to even just be, to mirror a semblance of what he showed me, which was true love. And he taught me an invaluable lesson about humility and forgiveness. For 20 years, I didn't see this individual, and he outright told me, man, yo, Ma, I felt some ways because I expected for you to be a true friend to me, and you were not. You broke my heart. And the truth was that I broke that man's heart. So we had to be harsh with each other, man. I told him, I said, listen, brother, you have every right to be upset at me. I failed to live up to the expectations that you held of me, and I truly apologize for that. May you forgive me. And we went back and forth, and he began to tell me. He brought me up on charges, man. And he let me know, listen, man, I'm really disappointed in the things that I expected from you. I wanted you, you told me you would do that. You didn't do it. I expected for you to do this. You didn't do that. You told me this. And he just ran them off. But he said, I forgive you. And that's what the streets, or just life in general, man, when you adhere to a set of values that go contrary to righteous values that you know to be right and exact, but you deviate from that and you veer off into a lane where you go contrary to that, you're going to disappoint a lot of people in the process. And he just so happened to be one of those individuals who I disappointed, who I let down, who, for all intents and purposes, I just wasn't a good friend of. But today, this is one of my best friends, man, that I've had in my entire life. In fact, he's my brother. I love him. He forgave me, and I had nothing to forgive him for because he's always been consistent. He's doing spectacular. He has a beautiful family. I love him. I love him. I love him to death. And during my time of incarceration, he could have kicked me down and said, you know what? I'm not going to, you know, step up to the plate. But no, this brother would fly in from out of state, and he's on the first thing smoking. He's on a visit with my wife. He's sharing his thoughts with me, man. He's letting me know, man, that he's here for me. So he was more of a friend to me than I was a friend to him. So he taught me a lot about friendship as well. So I don't want to come off and give the impression like I'm preaching to the choir. Like I'm this great friend and, you know, yeah, listen to Moshe. I'm telling you what a great friend is and what it isn't. And I've always been a great friend. No, I would be very dishonest if I told you that. In order to know how it is to be a great friend, I had to tell you, I'm telling you right now that I was a horrible friend. And this is, again, this is what happens when you allow yourself to lose control over your own life, man. And I now know them streets, I just was a horrible individual, man. I lost myself in them streets, man. For real. I did. And you lose yourself when you don't even have the decency to be a true and honorable friend. Again, we always think that we can be an honorable friend when we're doing wrong. That's how the mindset is when you're in them streets. When you out there, dog-eat-dog mentality, and you trying to live that lifestyle. You don't always live up to what's righteous. And the people who are striving to do that, to live righteous, that is, to the best of their ability, begin to see chinks in your armor, which reflect the lifestyle that you're living, which is ultimately contrary to the value system that they know exists within inside of you. Since my coming home, I've been hearing from a lot of my friends from the past, from my PS273 years, which is elementary school. I haven't heard from some of these individuals in 20, 25, 30 years. But speaking to some of these individuals on the telephone is as if we're 9, 10, 11, and 11 years old all over again. But these are the people who I already mentioned that had a significant impact, because these were my formative years. My early years of childhood development. Where there was a level of innocence that, you know, after elementary school, it escaped us. It seemed to escape us all. So I'm thankful for their reaching out to me. But again, I'm in my heart, I'm saying to myself, wow, I really appreciate just hearing from these people. Because these individuals were some of those people who were instrumental in constantly reminding me of who I truly was and those values that they knew were imparted upon me by my elders. So when they saw me deviate, and they reminded me, like, what are you doing? So I didn't forget these individuals when I was locked up, because they were the ones who tried to steer me in the right direction. But I ultimately disregarded those that wisdom that they tried to bestow upon me. So moving forward, I strive to build meaningful relationships. This is what I strive to do. And what I mean by meaningful relationships is that in the past, I befriended people that didn't value friendship. But today I'm looking at the significance of what a meaningful relationship is. My elder brother told me, yo, bro, we need to start looking at our individual lives or persons as we are sovereign nations conducting business with other sovereign nations. Therefore, as a sovereign nation, you want to ensure that you're conducting business with another sovereign nation in a meaningful way that is beneficial for the interests of you and that sovereign nation. You want to build bonds that are solidified, where you're building strong bonds between you and someone else. And that's ultimately what it boils down to. So my advice to my listeners is to constantly reevaluate your relationships. I don't want us to be cynical. I don't want us to be, you know, to running around here questioning, you know, why everyone's in our lives. I'm not saying that. I'm not just saying you let anybody or you let anybody into your home. No, I'm not getting into that. What I'm simply saying is that when making moves, the moves that we make should be meaningful. The relationships that we are building should be meaningful. Are we doing things just for the sake of doing so? Or is there a reason why we're actually doing it? I'm not saying that we befriend people to be exploitive of them. We're not exploiting them. We're not taking advantage of anyone. But in order to build meaningful relationships, there has to be a quid pro quo. Somebody has to be giving you something and vice versa. It can be respect. It can be honor. It can be love. It can be trust. It doesn't have to be of monetary value. But in some instances, friendships are based on monetary value. But I'm not just saying that we should, you know, simply, you know, single a relationship out on that alone. No, I wouldn't suggest that. That would be disingenuous. I'm saying that we should constantly reevaluate the relationships that we are building and ask ourselves if our relationships are in furtherance of our goals and objectives. Because if you have friends in your life, so-called friends, who are encouraging you to do wrong, then you need to reevaluate your friendships. But if you are if you have friends who are discouraging wrong behavior, these are good friends, and vice versa. If you have friends that are discouraging good behavior, but encouraging wrong behavior, it's the same thing. So I hope that in moving forward, we were able to just gain just a little bit more in terms of how we view each other and how we view our relationships. Because moving forward, this is very important in terms of dealing with how we interact with each other on a daily basis. A lot of times we like to come up with these ideals as to what we need to do and how we need to go about doing them without first breaking down the barriers that may exist in our very lives. In order for us to build meaningful relationships, we have to know that we, you know, there is a relationship. The hardest thing to establish between two people is the ability to relate. But if we're going to make any significant progress, we have to first and foremost break down those barriers. And in terms of friendships, building solid friendships, or whatever the case may be like that, the only way that can be done is if we're honest with ourselves. So with that, I'm going to close out, but leave you guys with a quote that I leave you with every week. Our motto states, a conscious mind makes the best moves. And what that means is that the more aware you are, the more conscious you are, the likelihood exists that you'll make better moves, you'll make better choices, you'll make better decisions. So I hope that everyone out there makes the best moves that they possibly can make. All right, you guys take it easy, man. Assalamu alaikum. Shout out to my listeners out there. This is your host, Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. I hope everyone out there is continuing to remain focused, staying healthy, and also making conscious moves. Shout out to my loved ones who have continued to support me. And when I say loved ones, I'm talking about friends and family, individuals who I've known for quite some time who are helping me get through this process of becoming better acquainted with the nuances of this technology that a couple of weeks ago I had no knowledge of. So I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to just step out of a prison cell and then now become acquainted with, again, technology that has outpaced us all. So throughout this pilot phase, I'm definitely thankful for the people who have offered their support, their suggestions, individuals who have given me some very, very sound advice on how this project, this endeavor can can, you know, we can maximize the potential of this particular endeavor. So I'm definitely thankful for that. So I appreciate that. Shout out to my brothers who are behind the wall, who I just left. Some brothers who unfortunately are never coming home. They have natural life sentences. Some have 150 to life and 200 years to life, and the story goes on. But for the most part, in the unit that I was in, and even the jail that I was in particular, you know, some of the brothers that I left behind are never coming home. So that thought is constantly, and is consciously in my embedded in my head. I move forward every step that I take. It is something that I constantly think on, and I will not take this opportunity lightly. So I'm very thankful to be home and to have the opportunities to be able to convey my message across the airwaves to all my listeners out there. I hope that what I'm saying can be of benefit to not only myself, but to everyone as well. Today is this episode is episode 4. And today I want to just talk about the benefits of making conscious moves versus the harms associated with making unconscious moves. But what does that actually mean? What does that actually entail? Well, let me just simply say that when I describe the analogy that I use in regards to the chessboard and why the pieces, each piece on the board is significant in its own right, one not being more or less significant than the other. Some, when asked, what is the favorite piece on the board? People have a number of reasons or a number of explanations as to why they choose the particular pieces that they pick. Some say the queen, others say the bishop, others say the rook. But no one who I've ever asked this question to has ever stated the pawn is their favorite piece. When those of us who know how to play the game of chess know that when you continue to move your pawn forward into your enemy's territory, it has the potential to become any piece that you desire. So a piece is, a pawn is a very, very important piece on the board. It's not insignificant. And I stress the importance of that to simply say that no move you make is insignificant. Whether that move is an unconscious move or a conscious move, each are respectfully significant in their own right. One can lead to your success, and the other, unfortunately, can lead to your inevitable demise if you're not making the correct move. So again, today in episode 4, you know, again, we're going to discuss simply the benefits of conscious moves versus the harms associated with making unconscious moves. But let us first, and before we do that, we have to have some clarity in regards to what these definitions are of these particular terms. So I know I use these terms a lot, and I hope that they're not going over anyone's head. But let me break them down so that everyone can have a clear understanding as to exactly what I'm striving to convey. So when we speak about unconscious decision making, what does that mean? Well, let me just say this, that a unconscious decision or decision making or move or unconscious move, it's spontaneous. You know, it's haphazard. It's reactionary. It's sloppy. It's miscalculated. It simply fails to weigh the risk involved. It doesn't weigh the pros or the cons. In most cases, unconscious moves have dire consequences. Not in all cases, but in the vast majority of cases, they have dire consequences. Some examples of unconscious moves are let's say, for instance, unprotected sex. We know that we're living in a time in which sexually transmitted diseases, sexually transmitted infections are something that we should take very seriously. So we know that these things exist. So if I was an individual who just decided to have unprotected sex with random women with no care or concern in the world, I would be putting myself at a higher chance of potentially contracting an STD or an STI. By doing so, I'm making an unconscious move. I'm being spontaneous. I'm being sloppy. My moves are miscalculated. I'm not weighing the pros and the cons. And this behavior has dire consequences. So I may get gonorrhea. I may get chlamydia. I may get HIV. I may get the human papillomavirus, among others. So this is a simple example of that. Another example would be joining a gang. Like I mentioned, what was my story? Another example might be what took place in the crime that I was ultimately incarcerated for. I didn't get into the specifics of that. I hope to. But let me just simply say that what I was locked up for was a 20-second robbery, which cost me 20 years of my life. It took all but 20 seconds for this diabolical scheme to go disastrous. And I spent a total of 22 years in prison as a result of that. Unconscious moves, in this case, a 20-second robbery, for me, had unforeseen consequences associated with that. So while in prison, let me just simply express to you some of the unforeseen things that happened while I was in prison. When I say unforeseen, let me break that down to you. So when we do what we do, when I committed that crime, I thought that I was going to get some money for it. And I thought that my day, my week, and the next couple of weeks would be easy for me. I didn't foresee what the future had in store for me. So let me just break down exactly some of the unforeseen consequences that happened as a result of that unconscious move. On February 9th of 1999, because I got locked up for the crime on October 6th, 1998 in Baltimore, Maryland. They had to extradite me back to New York City. So, not even 4 months later, just a little over 4 months later, I received the news that my sister was tragically killed in a car accident. This was on February 9th, 1999. Shock blew my entire world, turned my entire world upside down. In fact, emotionally and psychologically, I still have not recovered from that. Fast forward to 2002. My family, we lost my paternal grandfather, who was the pillar of our family. Fast forward to 2005. On December 4th, 2005, we lost my youngest brother, Shemay, tragically to a car accident. The same exact way that we lost my sister, Ishana, we lost my younger brother the same exact way. They were the same age. In 2014, in April, I lost my maternal grandmother. And then 8 months later, on Christmas of that same year, we would then lose my mother, my very own mother. Earlier this year, March, I didn't mention that my mother passed away on Christmas of 2014. While I don't celebrate Christmas, you know, I have a lot of family members and friends who actually do. However, my mother passed away on Christmas of 2014. My father, earlier this year, passed away on March 23rd, the day before my wife and I's marriage anniversary. Not to mention a host of family, or uncles, aunts, friends, cousins, and et cetera, et cetera. These are the unforeseen consequences of that unconscious move. So while it may have appeared that I had it all figured out when that move was being made, I could not foresee all this. Had I foreseen that my loved ones would just disappear, I probably wouldn't have made that decision. Because when you're sitting in the cell and you're constantly having the prison chaplain come to your cell to the cell that you occupy to tell you that, you know, you've lost a loved one, it's not a good feeling. It is probably the most psychologically and emotionally traumatic thing that can happen to you under those circumstances, especially if you were close to your loved ones like I was with mine. So unconscious moves not only are spontaneous, but they carry with them dire and unforeseen consequences that we can't even imagine. In contrast, we have conscious decision making. Conscious decision making is well thought out, strategic, calculated, organized, structured, purposeful. Conscious decision making weighs the risk involved. It weighs the pros and cons. It critically examines things. You're not just moving for the sake of doing so. You're thinking about it. So as opposed to saying, you know what, let's run up in the store, let's go get some bread, let's go get that bag. You're weighing the pros and the cons of that. You know what? I can do some time in prison. I could be away from my loved ones. While I'm locked up, my loved ones might, you know, pass away. I might go in the store, get shot. I might get killed myself walking up in the store. You know, you never know what happens. This is what a conscious decision maker is doing. They're weighing the pros and the cons of these situations. And in most cases, or from experience, I know that conscious moves produce positive outcomes. You might not see it at that moment instantaneously, but ultimately, you can see the fruit of your labor if you continue to stay on your path or if you continue to make conscious moves. And examples of conscious moves now are, let's say, for instance, eating healthy. You have a diet that is not overwhelmed with sodium and sugar or fructose, but you're eating a vegan diet that is high in plant-based. It's organic. Studies have shown that diets like this are more beneficial for you. Last week, I spoke about picking your friends wisely, picking wise fruit, picking your friends wisely like your fruit is another example. This is a conscious move. I can give you various examples of conscious moves, similar to the game of chess. You're not just moving your pieces on the board unconsciously. You're doing so because when you move your pawn up to 13 to 29, you can pretty much expect that there's going to be a response to that. So you have to, in your mind, imagine the responses that can come. In more cases than not, the opponent, the worthy opponent who can foresee more of your moves before you make them is the one who is more than likely going to be the victor. And this is what happens in life as well. When you're able to see the positive results of conscious moves you make, the likelihood exists that you will be able to reap the benefit of your labor. The same applies for unconscious moves. If you can see consciously, not unconsciously, if you can see consciously ahead that unconscious moves will ultimately lead you somewhere down a path of destruction and peril, if you can see that, and then you say, I'm not going to engage in that behavior, but I'm going to make a conscious move. Now you're thinking consciously. Now you're putting yourself in a position to succeed or be successful at an endeavor or a number of endeavors. Another example of a conscious move would be somebody like, let's say, going to school, making wise career choices. Some people are in school right now, in high school right now, mapping out what they want to do for their career. Some people are, some kids are saying, wow, I'm looking at how the world is you know, being revolutionized or evolutionized. Many kids are getting involved in science and technology and engineering and mathematics. They're watching this trend of the world and they're getting involved in that because they want to be a part of this wave. This is a conscious move. So it's no surprise why you see many kids going to MIT, going to Stanford, among other places, because they understand that they see themselves being successful in this particular field. And that goes for other areas as well, or other fields as well. So they're making moves. They're making conscious moves. There is, for our people in particular, there is an historical link between unconscious thinking of the present to unconscious thinking of the past. In the past, our people were programmed how to think. As slaves, we were a threat if we were independent, self-reliant thinkers. So our oppressors intentionally broke us down to ensure that our way of thinking would further the interests of them. Thus, being in conscious was not in our best interest, but it was in the best interest of our oppressors. Thus, this link between the past and the present is reflected in our unconscious behavior today. In addition, let me say this. Our condition as a people today is a reflection of systemic policies and practices designed to keep us in a state of unconsciousness. Many of us do not even know that we are unconscious. In fact, many of us do things that have been so programmed into us without even thinking about it. And many of these things that we do unconsciously are actually harmful for us. I just gave an example of the crime that I was locked up for. Unconscious behavior. Believing somehow that it was all right to commit the crime that I committed. That's unconsciousness. Another example, and I mentioned this, was eating healthy. I spoke about eating healthy being a conscious move that one is making. But look at how we eat. Our diets are a hodgepodge of recipes passed down to us from our ancestors that we all know is a staple of our community. I can name a whole bunch of dishes that we know. Fried chicken, macaroni, cheese. Let's get it. the list keeps going on and on and on and on and on and on and fat back and we can go on. Many of these dishes, while we know them to be tasty, are in fact detrimental to our health. It's no secret that we have poor diets. However, we also know that it's no secret that the way we eat is interconnected to our socioeconomic status. In many cases, we don't have a choice but to eat what's in our communities. So how can we expect to eat any healthier when our financial resources are scarce or when our when we are provided with inferior quality of food in our communities? So this is by design. And just like the game of chess, our opponent is predicting and dictating our moves. So while our opponent is conscious of what they want to do, we, on the other hand, are unconscious as to what it is we should be doing. Our community is dying at such a rapid rate from so many ailments, it's ridiculous. Whether it's hypertension, whether it's diabetes, strokes, any other form of cardiovascular diseases, cancers. How many cancers we know why people are dying from? Prostate, colon, lung. Our people are dying from AIDS, related illnesses. COVID-19, black-on-black violence. Do I have to keep going on? The list goes on and on. Black people are the leading victims of deaths for mostly all causes of deaths. But how much of our deaths are contributed to unconscious decision making? Would we be dying so exponentially if we were conscious of our moves? Would a conscious single mother of four be able to feed her children on an organically whole diet of foods rich in vitamins and nutrients? Let's just ask that question honestly. Or due to her circumstances, is this same conscious mother forced by necessity to feed her children a low quality diet that we know is heavily laden with sodium and other additives and preservatives? Other poisons that are just killing us. Would this conscious mother, because let's just say this woman's conscious, she knows. She's not just a woman walking around here deaf, dumb, and blind, not knowing what's going on. She's aware. But her circumstances and a predicament is preventing her from doing what she would like to do. So would this conscious mother then be making an unconscious move? Does that even make sense? That we know better, but we don't do better? But can you fault this woman? How does she feed her kids? You know, one of the biggest problems confronting us as a people is our dependence and reliance on those who could care less about our well-being. So as the one-time slave holder profited off our people's backs as they profited off our people's black backs to our detriment, or to their detriment, our ancestors in that case, others are doing the same to us today. I cannot stress the importance of us, you know, we cannot afford to be conscious of our conditions, but out of necessity forced to make unconscious decisions which ultimately jeopardize our livelihood. If we continue to do so, I am confident our opponent, just as he would on the chessboard, will checkmate us. We will be put in a precarious situation where it will be checkmate. Therefore, we have to make some tough decisions. We have some very, very tough decisions to make. The question is, do we remain unconscious or do we strive to make conscious moves? The good thing about this is that we all have a choice to make. What choices you make are key to determining if your next move will be a conscious one or an unconscious one. I know that when I speak, sometimes I give off the impression as if I got it all figured out. I don't want anybody to think that. You know, we really have to work harder for succeeding at, if we really have to work harder if we are gonna make any significant progress moving forward. But we have to be willing to put the work in. I know it's not hard, but we have to begin the process of making better moves. We have to be more conscious of the moves that we are making. For the next week, I want everybody to begin the process of writing their moves down. It doesn't have to be move for move, not each step. But if you're doing something that has hindered your growth, your development, you know what it is. I don't know what that is. Only you know what that is. Then, you know, grab your cell phone, man, and go to the notes section, man, and just write, you know, type it into your phone, man. And just say, you know, I smoke cigarettes, man. But if you smoke a pack a day or a half a pack a day, make a conscious move to not smoke a half a pack a day or a pack a day. What is it, 20 cigarettes in a pack? And I'm not going to encourage you to smoke. But if you're doing that every day and in the next week, you're now trying to be more conscious. And if the next week you can say, I don't smoke a pack, but I'm only smoking 10 cigarettes a day, but I made a conscious decision to weed it out of my daily intake of toxins, of poisonous toxins, then you're making a conscious decision to be better. That's all that we can ask of you. Make a gradual step towards being a better person, a better individual. Do it consciously. And if you can do that individually, I am of the ilk of individuals who believe that over the course of time, progress will continue to be made in your life and it will ultimately produce positive outcomes. So I'm gonna leave y'all with that. We have a decision to make. Do we make conscious decisions? Or do we make unconscious decisions? Ultimately, the choice is ours. Again, I hope something that I said could be of benefit to all of us. I don't know if I will be able to reach each individual who this message has the opportunity of reaching. But if I just reach one person, then I've done my job. I'm going to leave you guys with a quote that I say every week, which is the motto of who we are. A conscious mind makes the best moves. And what that means is that the more conscious you are, the more aware you are, the likelihood exists that you'll make better moves, that you'll make better choices. So I hope that we make better moves. And with that, y'all stay healthy. Assalamu alaikum. Shout it out, y'all. This is Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. This segment is sponsored by Mighty Healthy. Listen, one of the best conscious moves that you can make is to invest in your physical health. Mighty Healthy will help you do just that. It strengthens your immune system, improves digestion, reduces inflammation due to its high concentration of antioxidants, and replenishes your body with the essential vitamins and minerals it needs daily. Go to MightyHealthy.com, and to get 20% off of your purchasing price, type in the code CONSCIOUS. Tell them that Moshe sent you.